Good morning, boot campers. You can sit, and then I'm going to ask you to raise your hand if you know what a dream board is. A dream board. Okay, I'm going to tell you. A dream board is where you pin the life-changing goals that you want to accomplish during high school. Your science research, your travel adventures, your talent development, your building of businesses, your building of apps, your founding of organizations, your acing the standardized tests. And then next to them, you put a timeline with the approximate date by which you expect to accomplish each goal. And at the end of your dream board, you place your dream colleges and you keep your eye on that prize until April 1st of senior year. You know, the wonderful thing about all of your dreams is that if you act on them, you will not only find out how vibrant, fascinating, and powerful you are as individuals, but you will be giving your college application a huge bump. Who wants to discover how to get into their dream college? Say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. That's what I'm doing here, to try to pour as much strategy and information into you as I do into my 9th through 12th graders from around the world. So let's start with the most important mantra of college admissions. The things that make me different are the things that make me. Repeat it with me. You ready? The things that make me different are the things that make me. Right. The experiences and accomplishments that you have in the first 3 years of high school are the things you're going to be writing about on your college application. So you have to make them as meaningful, impactful, and authentic to you as possible. You know, just talking about doing cool leadership or thinking about a great idea for a business or interesting research is not going to move the needle on your life or on your college application. Just do it. You don't need to be perfect. You just need to be original. And to be original, you have to have experiences. And I mean experiences other than the experience of taking the most rigorous course load and getting A's. But that is an excellent experience to have. But I mean experiences that are outside the walls of your high school. Experiences that shape you, mold you, inspire you, peel away the layers of you as leader, you as intellect, you as empathic human being. If you learn how to make your high school career speak, you will grab the attention of your best loved and best fit colleges. You know, when you see acceptance rates of 3.9%, 5%, 6% at our top universities like Stanford and Harvard, Yale, Princeton, MIT, those are the percentages for students who have never found their authentic voice during high school and never built anything that made a dent. Those are not your percentages. They are not your percentages if you act on everything we talk about today. So, let's dig in. I'm going to take you for a walk over to this lovely board here. And here we have a picture of two mountains, sort of. It's not a work of art, but I drew it just for you. You're welcome. Okay, this is my perception of a high-achieving high school achiever's mindset. Okay, I've got to concentrate everything on my GPA. GPA, 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 GPA. I forgot my standardized test. Got to do well on the standardized test. Test, 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 test. Wait, what about research? I'm a STEM student. I've got to do research. Who's a STEM student who doesn't do research? Research, 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 research. Oh, forgot about leadership. You can't get into college without leadership. Got to be a leader, 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 leader. What's wrong with this picture, aside from my drawing? What's wrong with this picture? None of the bridges make it over to the other side. You start creating a bridge, and then you stop in the middle, and then you start building another bridge before you've completed the first bridge. Stop creating half-built bridges. Start from point A with one bridge and one dream and take it to its most successful conclusion. I'm going to give you some concrete examples right now. Let's say that your dream and your first bridge is happening this summer. Maybe you're going on a mission trip to a developing nation clinic. Well, that is a beautiful thing to do and a beautiful way to be of service. But don't just go and have the experience. Keep a detailed journal. Write about the relationships you create with the children, with the elderly, with the patients, with the healers, with the practitioners. Talk about how they have impacted your life and how you have impacted theirs. And then when you come home in the middle of August, extract a few gems from that journal and write about that in your college personal statement. Boom! One bridge completed. Let's say that this summer your bridge and your dream is doing science research, bench research at a lab. Okay, that's great, but don't just do the research as part of the team. Ask them to peel away your own piece of the original research so that you can do that research yourself, be mentored in the science research paper, come home in the fall, polish it up, make sure it's according to Intel ISF rules and regulations, and submit it to the science fairs so you can compete. Boom! Another bridge completed. Maybe your dream and your bridge is to take a college course this summer. Fantastic. Admissions loves to see that you have a passion for the life of the mind and that you'd love to study courses other than the traditional curriculum in high school. But don't just take the course anywhere. Try to take it at a top university, top-tier university, and make sure that you get a transcript with a grade and work really hard so maybe that grade will be an A. And then walk that transcript into your high school guidance counselor and ask, please send this transcript along with my high school transcript to all of the colleges to which I'm applying so that they can see that, in fact, I not only took a course at a top-tier college, but I got an A at that course, and that means that I can succeed on their campus as well. Boom, another bridge completed. Maybe it's a travel adventure. Maybe you want to travel to learn more about a particular kind of music you've been fascinated by or a particular kind of healing you've heard about and are interested in. Well, beautiful, but don't just go and have the experience. Maybe film a documentary about it. Or create an audio interview library with the musicians or pedagogues or the healers and practitioners. And then when you get home, extract a few gems from that documentary or from those interviews and write an inspirational, powerful college essay. Boom! Another bridge completed. Look, you've got to plan your dreams from this day. Build a base camp, strategize, climb. Build a camp, strategize, climb. If you try to just blast through high school without plans and strategy, it'll be like trying to climb Mount Everest without supplies or a plan. You won't make it and you'll get frostbite. In this way of completing small dreams one after the other and of building bridges and finishing the building of that bridge, you will not only become one of the faceless 35,000 applicants to your schools of choice, you will become aggregators of attention in the admissions office, and you will impress the Itte Bitte Kitte Committee. You know what I'm saying? What exactly? Okay. Next, now we're going to drill down. I know them personally. So. Now we're going to drill down into the 7 most important factors for college admissions. So if you want to take notes, now is a great time to start. These are not in any particular order, except the first two. Those are, in fact, the most important two. Number one is grades. Your transcript is king in admission. Nothing is more important than your transcript grades. But of course, now I must elide that into number two, which is rigor of curriculum. So if you're applying to a top-tier school, it is your grades in the most rigorous courses possible for you to take that are important. So what does this mean? This means that if your school offers 15 APs, let's say, and you've only taken one or two by the end of junior year, you're going to have an issue if you're applying to a top-tier school. However, if your school only offers one or two. And you've taken those two and you've pushed against those boundaries and you've gone to a college or university nearby to take college level courses, right? Or you've taken the exact or the equivalent AP courses online through EPGY Stanford University or Johns Hopkins online. Then admissions will be as impressed with you as they are with the student who took 8 APs in their high school. So you see, there is always a way. Don't fret about it because you think you don't have enough APs in your school. There is a way to take the number that you need. Now, just a word about the AP madness, though. If you are taking 5 AP courses, which you will likely do senior year, and the thought of taking one extra AP makes your head explode, don't take that extra AP. I know you know somebody who's taking AP Psych as a 6th AP. That's because they still think that taking an extra AP is going to get them admitted over you. They, however, are not likely doing the kind of leadership or outside intellectual endeavors that you will be after today. They don't know that that extra AP will not do a thing for them. But you know now. Let's take a look at what that extra AP would cost you. So how much time does an extra AP cost during the year? You've got to figure 6 to 8 hours extra in homework and tests, studying for tests during a week. There are 36 weeks in the school year. You've got to figure 90 hours of studying for that AP exam in the spring, if you're doing it right, if you're working to get a 5 or a 4. That's 378 hours. Do you know what you could do with your leadership initiative with 378 hours? Just saying. Next of importance, your standardized tests. If the schools you're applying to do require standardized tests, then they are top on your list. Your SAT, your ACT, your IBs, your AP exams, and your SAT subject tests. You'll be taking 2 subject tests, most likely. I know some top schools like Georgetown require 3, but most and the Ivies require 2. By the way, make sure that you're back in your seats after lunch because our amazing test prep expert, Tom Ehlers from Princeton University, is going to be teaching you tips and strategy on how to take the new SAT and the ACT. So you don't want to miss that. Okay, next in line is leadership and commitment. And this does not mean being a member of 4 or 5 clubs. It means being the leader of 1 or 2 and being able to say what your impact has been as a leader in those 1 or 2 clubs. So on your resume, it's not enough to just list your title. I was a leader in this club. You have to actually, parenthetically, explain what your impact was. What did you accomplish? That's what admissions wants to know. They want to see you as a risk taker, because leaders tend to be risk takers. And they know that unless there's a precedent for you to be a risk taker, that you probably won't start being one on the college campus. So they're looking to you in high school. Next, letters of recommendation. Only choose 2 teachers who will glow about you. Now, if you've gotten an A+ in AP US History, but you've received that grade while engaging in some grade grubbing, you know, begging your teacher for an extra point here or there, do not ask that teacher for a recommendation. You want to be aggregators of attention in the admissions office, not in the teacher's lounge. The high school AP teacher is a sensitive animal, easily ticked off. So if you ask him to give a recommendation, it will come back to bite you, just like that. I know him too. Okay. Next, it is very important, junior year especially, to form a bond with your teachers. Just a couple of the teachers, maybe in the fields that you care about most. Hang out after class a couple of times. Talk about insights that you've found in the readings or the problem sets. Create a bond, or go to extra help, not to get it, but to help your teacher give it to others. Your teacher will be so thankful and will write a glowing recommendation for you. Next, it's important to form some sort of relationship with your guidance counselor. Maybe just have a 5-minute meeting in the fall and a 5-minute meeting in the spring just to let them know about your extrapreneurial pursuits and your intellectual pursuits outside of school. Remember, the guidance counselor is the one who has to write a recommendation for you for college and send your academic profile to college. So this is an important person. Make sure they know who you are. Also, if you know you're graduating the top of your class, make sure that you know your principal. Why? Because your principal can call your top two schools in the fall of senior year and speak on your behalf. Did you know that? They can, but they have to know who you are. Okay? So if you know you're going to be top of the class, make an appointment once a year. Just sit down with him or her and tell them a little bit about your new pursuits. Next, your common application essays and personal statements. I'm going to say very little about this right now because these are so vital to your admissions decisions that we're doing an entire segment on it today. But suffice it to say that they have to be as compelling and sophisticated as you can possibly make them, because it's your only chance to get your personal voice into a very impersonal and numbers-oriented situation. Next, demonstrated interest. Click on all the emails that come into you from a college that you care about so that your view can be registered with the sender. Go on college visits and make sure you sign in so that they know you were there. Big data and all. You have to make sure that you sign in. Write to admissions officers with updates every month or every 2 months after you submit your applications. Let them know about awards received or research published or research completed or funds raised, that kind of thing. Do an exceptional alumnus interview. We're going to talk about that later. Very important. And of course, applying ED, EA, or REA, restricted early action, to a school also shows them the love and shows them that you really would go to that school if accepted. And finally, for those of you who have your heart set on the top of the top tier and the Ivy League, I have a formula for you. It is a daunting formula. You will undoubtedly say to me, at least some of you will, afterwards, "But Dr. B, I know some people who got into those schools who didn't have all the components of this formula," and I will say to you, I am sure you are right. But do you know, are they recruited athletes? Do they come from an underrepresented part of the country like Montana or North Dakota? Okay, that will give you a bump, by the way, a good bump. Are they the first ones in their family to be going to college? There are so many reasons that students will be accepted into universities like that. You can't always know. But for the basic, super intelligent, super dynamic leaders that I have here in this audience, this is the formula you want to go by. Here we go. High GPA in the hardest courses you can take. That's a 3.9 unweighted or above. Okay? Plus, high SAT or ACT scores. For the SAT in the 700s, ACT 34 or above. Plus, high AP scores. That means mostly fives, guys. Some fours are okay. Plus, subject scores in the 700s. Plus, compelling and interesting essays. Plus, unique accomplishments outside of school that show passion and intellect over a significant period of time. Right? Plus, glowing teacher recommendations. Plus, regional or national awards or anything equivalent to that, like building an app that serves hundreds of people or that serves a medical organization. Plus, demonstrated interest. There it is. That's the formula by which you can assess which colleges will go on your dream board. You should always have reach schools. You just shouldn't have unreachable schools. Okay? It's important to understand that the top tier in the Ivy League are trying to create a class of world changers, leaders in medicine, engineering, the humanities, the arts, the social sciences, who will be exceptional in class and push other students to be exceptional as well and be extraordinary in their pursuits outside of class on campus, and who will graduate and make a mark in the world, make a name for themselves, and of course, a name for their school. That's why they're very picky about this particular formula. And if you need more evidence of that, Dean Fitzsimmons of Harvard University has said, quote, "We like to think that all of our students have strong personal qualities and character and that they will educate and inspire their classmates over the next 4 years of college. And we expect that they will make a significant difference in the world after they leave Harvard," unquote. There's your sign. How do they find their world changers? On your applications. Past success predicts future success. Okay, so now we are moving into the college admissions timeline. You're going to be taking notes. There's information is going to be coming at you very, very quickly. So be ready. Freshmen, where are my freshmen? Raise your hand. Yay, okay, great. Freshman year, you're going to take the most rigorous courses you can take, of course, but also make sure that you have a couple of electives because you need a breather and you need to get used to high school. Schedule a meeting with your guidance counselor at the beginning of the year, preferably in September, of course, to get to know that person, but also to find out the special programs that might exist in connection with the school or outside of the school that you might be able to get involved with. What am I talking about? I'll tell you. If you're the kind of student who needs serious study in music or the fine arts or in coding or in science research in order to flourish, then ask your counselor if you can have an abbreviated schedule in high school, meaning you take all of your major subjects in the first part of the day, and you're done by about 1 o'clock, and then perhaps you're picked up either by bus or perhaps by a parent, and taken to the next place of education, which for you might be a music conservatory, an arts academy, a dance academy, a film academy, a coding academy, any academy that will make your heart sing. That will enable you to continue your education in something that you're passionate about. Now, students do this, you know, around the country. Now, your guidance counselor may say, well, I suppose this is possible, but nobody does it here. Everyone follows the traditional curriculum. There's your sign. What is the mantra for college admissions? The things that make me different are the things that make me. Here's a chance for you to differentiate yourself. Don't be afraid to take a slightly different program, a slightly different curriculum. You must take your rigorous courses, but after that, differentiate. Okay. Next, freshman year, you want to have a lot of options, trying out a lot of different clubs, so that sophomore year you can peel away the extraneous clubs and decide which two you are going to climb up the leadership ladder in. But freshman year is for you to try out all these different clubs. By January of freshman year, you're going to be thinking about the summer and vetted summer programs in fields that you care about. If you have no idea where to begin with summer programs, the best summer programs for your field, give us a call. You can pick up a card upstairs and we will help you out. Now, since most of you are interested in STEM, study, and research, I thought it might be a good idea for you to know about your STEM research options. Now, here's the thing. Students around the country know that you can't do bench research in a lab, right, until you're 16. That's very good for you, because that means most students are not starting research until they're 16. But I'm going to tell you about science research that you could begin right now as a freshman and a sophomore. And that science research, if you begin it, will give you a leg up on this entire admissions process because it will show your thread of passion in science throughout your high school career. Those two areas of science research are field-based environmental study and behavioral science research. Now, field-based environmental study, which is plant and wildlife research, exposes students to the techniques and technologies used by scientists today in the most pressing conservation issues. Environmental science is a very hot topic, very hot major in colleges today. And if you would like to engage in environmental science research, again, give us a call and we will find a place for you in some of the most vetted programs over the summer, or perhaps be able to set up your field-based environmental science research during the year. And that would be through our science research director, who just happens to be an Intel ICEF affiliated judge. And his students are national and international award winners every year in field-based environmental science research and behavioral science research. Now let's talk about behavioral science research. That involves you creating a survey about a particular behavioral slash medical question. You glean research, you glean the data, you analyze the data, you form sober critical conclusions based on that data, you create a research paper, and then you submit it to the fairs. Now, what kinds of questions would you study in behavioral science research? It could be almost anything. Questions like, how do caregivers of people with epilepsy cope? How do food allergies affect social bonds? Do salad eaters get sick less frequently than meat eaters? Does birth order affect grades? Do figure skaters do better at math than other athletes? Does excellence in music translate to excellence in science? These kinds of studies give you the chance to form that bridge from 9th grade, 10th grade, into 11th grade and 12th grade. You can even change in 11th grade, if you want, when you hit 16, and start bench research. It doesn't matter. You have shown that you are that serious scientist all the way through. Behavioral science research is the absolute easiest kind of research to do remotely with our science research director, because he can set up a program and set up your survey from wherever you are, from Alaska to Florida. Okay, now we're moving into sophomore year. Where are my sophomores? Yes, okay. Sophomore year, you have tried the other activities already in school. You know which clubs you want to go for leadership in, the clubs that you will make the most impact in, and you choose them. That's it. Get rid of all the extraneous clubs, because what should you be concentrating on? You should be concentrating on your grades, which start to be under a microscope sophomore year, and you should be concentrating on your extrapreneurial leadership, your leadership and intellectual work outside of school that will differentiate you. Of course, you're going to work your hardest to do well in your courses. Sophomore year, some schools will allow you to take APs, and I think you definitely should get your feet wet sophomore year with that. Usually the AP is AP Computer Science or AP Euro, AP European History. Now let me say a word about AP or IB courses, just for a second. I know that AP and IB are a lot more rigorous than honors courses. I know they cause you stress at the end of the year when taking the exams. I know that you have the option not to take AP or IB, but I hope you do, because AP and IB play a bigger role in your life than just college admissions. They broaden your knowledge base. They teach you how to think and write critically in ways you've never done before. They give you an idea of what college classes are like, even though college classes will be much harder. And they show you what you're made of, because part of life is rising to challenges, and you certainly will rise to intellectual challenges if you take AP or IB. So there I've said it. AP and IB curricula are good for your intellectual health. Now, we're into October of sophomore year. You will take the practice PSAT, the practice PSAT. The scores mean absolutely nothing. But if you want the test to be of value to you, you want to make sure that you study for about a month before you take that practice test sophomore year, because then you have a real baseline. You find out how you scored after studying, right? Okay. So then you'll know exactly how to work for the rest of the year until your real PSAT. By December, you're going to start researching your summer programs, and please don't wait till the deadline to apply, because by sophomore year, a lot of your programs are very specialized and they require essays, and those essays will take you 2 to 3 weeks to complete. So you definitely want to make sure that you have enough time to complete them. You can sign up for subject tests in the spring of sophomore year if and only if you have taken an AP course in that subject, or your honors teacher has told you that your honors course has been built so rigorously that it has been built for you to take a subject test. If numbers 1 or 2 are not true, do not take a subject test sophomore year. Wait till junior year. And in fact, we are on junior year. Where are my juniors? Woo! Okay, you are in it now, guys. Junior year is the zaniest, busiest, most frenetic year of your high school experience. And if you discover coffee that year, it probably will also be your most highly caffeinated year. So I thought I would give you some advice as to when you should know that it's time to decaffeinate, because you have to know this. So you should switch to decaf if you've been studying calculus so long the voices in your head have bodies. If the idea of applying to 15 colleges suddenly sounds great to you. If your English teacher assigns a 10-page paper, you raise your hand and ask if it's okay if you're 10 pages over. If your study break to Starbucks results in you ordering something larger than a Trenta. If you found Waldo. If your guidance counselor sees you in the hall, asks how you're doing, and your response is, "Not now, I'm busy." If your response... It happens. If it's summer before senior year and you're writing code to circumvent the character limit on the Common App, it happens. Switch to decaf immediately. Okay, we're done with that. Now, junior year is for tests. Why else would we go to high school junior year if not to take tests, right? Okay, so in the fall of junior year, you want to make sure on your calendar you organize your tests. SAT, ACT in December. That allows you to retake in March, which allows you to start studying in April for your May APs, which then allows you a couple of weeks to study for your June, first week of June, subject tests. God bless you all. And then you will be done with all of those lovely tests. Now listen up, juniors. You're going to notice something. Spring break of junior year, a lot of your friends are going to be going on college campus tours. Do not follow them. Do not follow them. This is the only time you get one full week to study for your APs. Listen to me. From morning to night, you can study for those APs. 5 hours here, 5 hours in the evening, 5 hours, 5 hours. By the end of that week, you will feel eminently on your way to being prepared for your APs. And your friends who are gallivanting around campuses are going to be nervous wrecks. Take that into consideration, okay? In June of junior year, you need to ask your two favorite teachers for recommendations. You're going to hand them a resume. Of course, it'll be a resume draft, because in truth, you won't have your resume completed until September, when you learn certain things about your testing, what awards you've won, that kind of stuff. Hand them your resume. Highlight the things on your resume that you want them to know about you. They already know you're fabulous students, but they don't know that maybe you intern at a law office, or maybe you shadow physicians, or maybe you run a company, or maybe you founded an organization. They need to know that about you. Get a full picture. When it comes time to creating your senior schedule, make sure it is the most rigorous one you can handle. What does that mean? That means if you're applying to a top tier or Ivy, you are going to have an AP or equivalent in each major course. So that's five. Now, For all of you, actually, even if you wind up not applying in STEM, you must take an AP Calculus. My pre-meders, you'll be taking AP Calc AB at least. My engineers, you'll be taking AP Calc BC at least. And of course, if you're a math whiz, you'll be taking multivariable or differential. That's great. Why am I beating this? Because of the story I'm about to tell you. An admissions officer from a particular Ivy League school was in a casual meeting at a top New York high school. And in the Q&A section, a student raised his hand and said, "I have a 3.9 unweighted average, 2,300 on my SATs, have five APs, but I didn't sign up for AP Calculus next year because I'm going pre-law, and I thought that it would be a much better idea and much more foundational for my career to take AP Psychology instead. Is that going to be an issue when I apply to your college?" And without missing a beat, the admissions officer responded, "Well, there are other very good schools you could apply to." Oh, devastating, right? Devastating. But we learn a lesson from that. You do not make the expectations for the schools you're applying to. They make them. And the expectations are not always in black and white, ready for you to read. You won't necessarily find it on the homepage of the college website. You have to drill down into those websites. You have to read information outside of the website about what's expected from those colleges. You have to call admissions and ask them direct questions. And then, if you are satisfied that you can take all of the things that those people told you they really want you to take, and you still want to apply to that school, then you just have to take those courses. It's not about all the time what you want to take. It is about what they expect you to take. Okay, very important for you to know that. Now, we are up to the summer before junior year, which is a wonderful, wonderful time. It's a time that is supposed to change you, shape you, for you to have experiences that inspire you. And I'm going to tell you a story about just such an experience. My student Gabriel was on a mission trip to Honduras. And he was working in the pharmacy and work triage and was translating patient complaints from Spanish into English for the U.S. physicians who were volunteers and back into Spanish for the patients. He talked about lines of hundreds going from the entranceway to the examination room. Family units huddled in support, sleeping on the floors overnight just to get their loved ones diagnosed. And then there was little Josue, whose fever rose with every hour that ticked by. So at the end of the day, Josue's mama picked up his frail body and rushed him to Gabriel and made Gabriel promise that he would take Josue to the doctor, because she had to turn around and start the very long walk back to her village. She had other children. Gabriel rushed Josue to the doctor. The doctor took a look at him, diagnosed him, gave him medication, and within a few hours, Josue began to show signs of improvement. Well, at 11 o'clock that night, after a brutally long day for the doctors, the lead doctor picked up Josue, called Gabriel, they got into a truck, and started the long ride back to Josue's village. Right before the entrance to the village, they saw Josue's mama at the side of the road. They pulled over, they picked her up, they told her son would be fine, and they dropped them both off safely at home. Gabriel came home and wrote on his college essay, quote, "This was the kind of medical kindness one only reads about in novels. I was very aware that this moment was not just happening to me, it was happening to us, all of us who are young and dreaming of entering the field of medicine, because there's a chance of saving a family, not just a life, of saving potential, not just a child, of saving the future of a nation, not just one little fighting spirit." Well, this is it, isn't it? Why you're all here? To save the world, to change the world with your medicine, your research, your technological innovations. But until you have such experiences, you won't understand how they can change you. Gabriel is now a pre-med student at Brown University in their 8-year direct med program, PLEME. Okay, it is summer before. Yes, it's a wonderful story, and he's a wonderful boy. Okay, it's summer before senior year. Time to buckle up. We're almost there, seniors. Summer before. Where are my seniors? Woo! Oh, you are absolutely in it now. July. Oh, that's coming up, guys. I'm feeling it for you. July. Before senior year, you need to complete your Common App and your resume and your activity sheet. That's also on the Common App. And your 650-word personal statement, so that on August 1st, you can hit the ground running and get through about a half dozen applications by the end of August, because the most nerve-wracking thing in the world is walking back into high school and 5 AP courses and not having done at least half your applications. Okay? Work on that. Now, a way that your parents can help you over that summer is by collecting your video clips, your photos, your audios, your slides, PDFs of research papers, so that you can create your resumotive in August. Now, I know my pre-med students have already heard about ResoMotive at the Congress. SciTech, you're going to hear about ResoMotive more in-depthly at the Congress. But in order to keep everybody on one page today, if you'd forgive me, I'm going to repeat certain things about the ResoMotive. Okay, ResoMotive is the multimedia-generated resume that you must have, especially for the top tier in the Ivies, but you must have it for college, period. ResoMotive takes all of your media, your video clips, your audio, your high-def photos, your PDFs of research papers, and your slides, and builds them into a totally custom, elegant visual presentation of your high school career. All of my students use ResoMotive. The top tier and Ivies love it. I'll tell you why at the SciTech Congress. But suffice it to say right now that ResoMotive is the only chance admissions gets to meet you one-on-one and hear your why. It is a powerful tool. Next. Ah, yes. Okay, this is important to many of you, I know. If you discover that your standardized test scores are not matching your extraordinary GPAs, please don't get overly stressed about it. There are a number of extraordinary universities and colleges in our nation that don't even require standardized tests anymore. Schools like George Washington University, American University, liberal arts colleges like Bowdoin, one of the top, right? Bates, Bennington, Bard, all the B's, Muhlenberg, Franklin and Marshall, top colleges. So I don't want you to stress about this. You have done extraordinarily well. If you're not a test taker, there is another route for you to take. Okay, so seniors, we're moving on into the calendar now. It is now September of senior year. You're going to make an appointment with your guidance counselor. Why? We want your guidance counselor to read over a couple of your essays, especially if you're not working with a college admissions advisor or professional advisor. You need to have your guidance counselor look at a couple of those essays. You also want to discuss any shifts that have occurred over the summer in your decision to apply regular decision, early decision, restricted early action, or early action. You also want to check out the pool of applicants from your high school who are applying early to the same school as you. There might be a superstar who's applying early to the same school, and you might say, you know, I'm going to kind of game of chess this, and I'm going to apply early to a different school, and I'm going to apply regular decision to that school, so my application is looked at with a different pile of students. That is a strategic move, and it can often be a very good move. Make sure that there are two safety schools on your list, 5 target schools, and 4 reach schools. If you're in the top tier of graduates graduating high school this year, you need to have more colleges to apply to because the process becomes more and more whimsical the more competitive you are as students. I know that's a bummer, but that is the way it's played. Now, you need to scale up your leadership endeavor by fall of senior year. I need to see quantifiable information on your resume that shows me exactly what your impact was in your leadership initiatives or in your research or intellectual initiatives. What do I mean? I'm going to tell you exactly. Let's say that junior year, you built an app for multiple sclerosis patients to locate specialists around the country who will help MS patients if they're traveling and suddenly have an episode. Well, that is a beautiful service to give to any medical organization. But now, how do you scale it up? Well, senior year, fall, I want to know how many patients are there who suffer from MS in the United States, okay? Or if you're serving globally, how many globally? When you find that number, put it on your resume, because those numbers become your numbers. Your app now serves that number of patients. That's very important. It credentializes you further for admissions. I also want to know how many specialists exist in the U.S. or abroad who deal with, who specialize in MS. those numbers become your numbers too, because now you're opening up an entire nation or a world to know about those specialists. Then I want to know, if you haven't been already endorsed by the National MS Society, we've got to get you endorsed. So you write an email, or you call and speak to the CEO, or perhaps the development office or the programming office, and you say, I built this app. You explain the app. It's my gift to you. Would you be kind enough to make a note about it on your website or in your national monthly magazine or at your conference every year? And most likely they will say yes, because what a gift that is that you've given them. Now you've been endorsed by a national medical organization. I want to see that on your resume. Endorsed by the National MS Society. All of these things credentialize you. All of these things will change your life if an admissions officer sees that on your resume. Very important. Okay, next, remind your two selected teachers about the recommendations, just gentle nudge, and get them a little gift and write them a handwritten note. That's a lost art, okay? Thanking them for doing those recommendations. They probably took a weekend to recommend you, you know? To-do list for October. End of October, your common application and all of your supplementary essays for any applications you've completed so far have to be in the guidance office. And you know which application must be in the guidance office by third week of October? Your early applications by third week of October in. You can take one more shot at the SAT in October. I know some people do it in November. That makes me very nervous. It's too risky, especially if you're applying early. You really never know if they're going to receive it on time to make the early decision. So I'd say October is about it. If there are unusual circumstances to your schooling, you must write to admissions. To the regional admissions officer and to the dean of admissions at every school to which you are applying. You must write and explain those unusual circumstances. So, if you homeschool, or if you partially homeschool, or if you have an abbreviated school day and you go elsewhere for the rest of your education that day, okay? They need to know that. If you're grades have dropped because you had an illness, or God forbid, there was a tragedy in your family, admissions needs to know that. And so you need to write a very elegant, formal email explaining all of those things and sending them out to all of your colleges. Now we're on November. November, you can ask an additional teacher to do a recommendation for you. That's called an ancillary recommendation. It can be someone, again, in your field of STEM. Better if it's someone outside of the field. Maybe you're not only a STEM whiz, maybe you're a very talented writer. Ask an AP teacher to write for you, or ask your lab mentor to write for you, or a boss, or the CEO of the national organization you serve. All of these will be looked at very carefully by admissions. And midway through November to end of November, you want to start writing love notes to admissions. Yes, we want to tell them what updates have happened in your life since you submitted the application at the end of October. How much have you raised in funds? Have you had your research published? Have you won an award, etc.? They need to know that. And if it's true, you can say, X University remains my top university for my top choice for college, and I will attend if admitted. I will attend if admitted. Those are magical words if admissions is already seriously considering you. It makes them stop and understand that they won't be admitting you and then you'll be saying no to them. Okay? That is a little something you can do in November. We are moving on to December. December is that final push. Most of your regular decision applications have to go in December. Many will go in January, but December is really the month. Please proofread, proofread, proofread. Do not let your application be rejected because you have typos or because you have a few grammatical errors. That happens. Also, don't wait until the 11th hour to send in your application. Server crashes are real. Get them in at least with a few days to spare. Make this month count with your grades. Interim reports are coming up, and admissions takes your senior first semester grades very seriously. If you've been admitted through early decision or early action on December 15th, hooray, you're done. You can write to all the rest of the schools that you applied to and tell them to please remove you from their dance card. And if you've been deferred, don't fret about it. It may just be that the schools want to see your application juxtaposed to the regular decision pile, okay? Your opportunity is you can write yet another essay and you can send yet another recommendation their way to show them how much you really want to attend that school. Okay, the next 3 months are just a waiting game. January, February, March, I know it's miserable, it's waiting. The only new thing is the interview. And your alumnus interview is an important little nugget in the admissions experience. And here's how you prepare for it. Some of it is kind of obvious, but not everyone does this. Make sure you have memorized every major point on your resume and that you have a corresponding anecdote to discuss with each point so that you're fluid when you're speaking. Okay? Make sure that you also have memorized the name of your major at that particular college. This sounds easy, but it's actually pretty tricky. If you find yourself having 3 interviews in a row, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and let's say you're majoring in government. Well, that major might be called government at your first interview school. It might be called government and politics at the next school. It might be called political science at the next school. It's a death knell for you if you get the name of your major wrong, so you must keep those straight. Memorize 2 courses that you really want to take, so that you can talk about them. Talk about a professor, memorize the name of a professor or two whose research or classes intrigue you. Memorize a couple of activities, extracurricular activities that you would like to be a member of or perhaps one day lead on campus. That should do it. Okay? That's how you prepare for your interview. And then April 1st arrives. You are accepted. It will happen. You will be accepted. Have a blast. Go to pre-frosh weekends. Go to the overnights at your top, let's say, 2 or 3 schools. Talk to everyone. Talk to students. Talk to professors. Talk to admissions. Sit in on classes. Can you see yourself both giving and receiving from these schools? Talk to your parents about financial aid. Maybe school number 2 gave you a better package than school number 1. Your parents can call the financial aid office and ask them to match it. It happens sometimes. If you are on a wait list and you are determined to stay on that wait list, then respond in the affirmative to the college, say, I want to be on the wait list, and you can write yet another essay and ask for yet another recommendation. But I recommend that you fall in love with the school that fell in love with you. It is very rare to get off a wait list at a top tier or Ivy League university. Remember, the school that fell in love with you, you're their first choice. Be happy and have an extraordinary college career. Okay, now we have a clip from probably the most fun and the greatest college admissions video, Yale University's college admissions video. Take a look.
And that's why this is such an important decision, because it is one that will follow you now and into the future. And that concludes another traditional Yale information session. There will be a guided tour beginning in 15 minutes. In the meantime, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is it true that all Yale professors teach?
Another great question. It is true that every tenured professor in Yale College teaches undergraduates, so even a freshman might be taking a class from a Nobel Prize winner.
Ooh.
Any more questions?
Yeah, I have a question. Why did you choose Yale?
When I was a senior in high school, colleges called out my name. Every day I debated where to matriculate, but every place seemed the same. Yet after I went through the options, only one choice remained. I wanted to hail from a college called Yale.
Excuse me.
Yeah, admissions officer?
Tell us a bit more about residential colleges.
Sure thing.
Students here at Yale come from everywhere around, with every type of interest that could possibly be found. Do our passions divide us? No, our colleges provide us with family and common ground. For all 4 years we'll all reside together in colleges, united by pride. With such great facilities to hone your abilities, you'll never want to go outside.
Master brings us all together as our senior prof, hosting study breaks and lectures for when we need time off.
Would like to see a Broadway show? I'll gladly subsidize. Let's host another concert. I'll proudly harmonize.
All your favorite celebrities, hear their stories and ask advice.
Which is why I had to interview him twice.
I know which class to take. There's over 2,000 here.
More than 50 foreign languages. It's only our freshman year.
And when it's time to study for that intensive course, and you're looking for the perfect resource, Yale's libraries, I got what you need. Dozens of collections sure to help you succeed. Within this mountain of books, between these walls, you'll find music and film, ancient maps and all. You'll want for nothing, someone clearly thought of every detail.
Do you mind? This is a library.
Why it's yours, yeah.
Is that a great clip? You know that video? Yeah, it's a great clip. That video goes on for 14 minutes. It's extraordinary production value. And I know a lot of the kids in that video. And the young man who plays the admission officer, of course, was a student at Yale and then did become an admissions officer there. So it's pretty wild to see them. Okay. Dominating the college essay. Would you like to know how crucial is your college application essay to your college application? So crucial that one message couched in the right way can change the world for you. And look, admissions wants to know who the person is behind all those scores and grades, and the way they find out is through your essay. In some schools, like the University of Chicago, 30 to 50% of admissions acceptance decisions are decided by the essays. 30 to 50%. In fact, Senior Assistant Admissions Director Garrett Brinker notes that the very best essays come from students who have devoted a significant amount of time to introspection and preparation. It is apparent to us when a student has spent only a couple of hours on an essay. Well, of course, the essay is a major player when one school's A plus is another school's A minus, and when students have become so adept at taking standardized tests, it's hard to know what their heart is like and what's really going on in their heads. The essay tells us that. But here's the million-dollar question. How do you write the kind of essay that the top tier and Ivies want to see? Well, the first step is to change the way you think about the essay. Do not fear it. The essay is meant as not as a stumbling block. It is meant as a way for you to present your authentic self, to present something about you to admissions that shows them you are a compelling individual. Here are the application prompts for 2017. Ready? Prompt number one. Some students have a background, identity, interest, or talent that is so meaningful they believe their application would be incomplete without it. If this sounds like you, then please share your story. This is my favorite prompt. I think it gives students the greatest freedom to write their story. Now, if you have a story that works with one of the other prompts, by all means, use them. But this number one works with your average brilliant student who has great leadership. Okay. Number two, the lessons we take from failure can be fundamental to later success. Recount an incident or time when you experienced failure. How did it affect you, and what did you learn from that experience? It is tough to dig yourself out of a failure essay, because ultimately all that admissions remembers at the end of the essay is that you failed at something. So I don't usually allow my students to do this essay. The only students I advise to do this essay are those who have had the experience of building a company or founding an organization, so that their experience follows the narrative of try, fail, rebuild, succeed. So then the essay becomes more like an overcoming obstacles essay and less like a failure essay, because admissions can see that they've built something bigger than themselves, and of course they had a couple of glitches along the way, but ultimately they built that thing. So for those students following that narrative arc, it's okay to do that prompt. Prompt number three. Reflect on a time when you challenged a belief or idea. What prompted you to act? Would you make the same decision again? This is a sticky prompt, because what if that belief or idea is controversial? You don't know who's reading your application on the other side of that computer. So I'll talk more about this later, but stay away from controversial prompts. Next, number four, describe a problem you've solved or a problem you'd like to solve. It can be an intellectual challenge, a research query, an ethical dilemma, anything that is of personal importance, no matter the scale. Explain its significance to you and what steps you took or what steps could be taken to identify a solution. Okay, this is a great prompt for a serious student of engineering or science research, because you have a professional lexicon from which to pull and with which to write. A student who has created a prototype or built a product or done science research seriously for 6 months, a year, 2 years, created a research paper, possibly competed even with that research, will have a certain degree of sophistication and thoughtfulness creep into his or her essay that we can tell you're not going to have if you're a dabbler in engineering or research. So, if you are that serious student of engineering and research and you can use the jargon of the field, then by all means go for this prompt. Next, discuss an accomplishment or event, formal or informal, that marked your transition from childhood to adulthood within your culture, community, or family. This can be a vibrant, colorful essay. This can be really a beautiful essay. But there is a pitfall. Have to be careful that the essay doesn't become more about the cultural event and the beauty of that event than it is about you. You must stay at the center of your essay. You must be the driver of that essay. We have to watch you go from point A to point B in that essay. We have to see a change of perspective. Okay? In other words, it has to be built like a Bildungsroman that you learn about in school. Okay, now let's hit the deadly essay pitfalls. There are so many, but we just have time to look at a few of them. So here are the most important ones, I think. First, you've heard it before. First pitfall, taking a fierce stance on a controversial political or religious issue. Just don't do it. When you get accepted to that school, you will have 4 years to advocate for your cause passionately. It doesn't belong on the college application. Next, trying to write to the word count. Never try to write your essay to the word count. All it will give you is a suffocated essay. Could you imagine trying to write a heartfelt lyrical essay when you're going, okay, 261 words, that's 345 words, that's 464 words. Ugh, no. Just let the essay pour from you. So it's 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 words. That's fine. And extract the gems from that essay in the second pass, and you'll have a tighter, more economical and lyrical essay. And then before you're done, make sure that you read that essay out loud. If it starts with a bang and holds your interest and has beautiful closure, you may have your successful personal statement. If, however, it starts in sort of a boring way and it meanders in the middle and you fall asleep in the last paragraph, that's never a good sign, by the way. You probably don't have your essay. Okay? Next, do not write an outward bound essay, or how I won the football game essay, or how I saved the world essay, or my summer camp counselor experience essay. Surely there is more that defines you than those tired subjects. Do not write what you think a particular school wants to hear. You will never really know, and it changes from year to year. Let's say you found out that last year, Yale wanted tuba players. And so June of junior year, you finished your finals and boom, you started taking tuba lessons and you worked really hard. And by the middle of August, you were ready to sit down and write that essay. And you wrote about how much you love the tuba and how tuba players are just underrated and how lyrical the tuba repertoire is. And have you ever heard tuba repertoire? It's not lyrical. It's not lyrical at all. And by the way, Yale isn't looking for tuba players this year. So what are you going to do? The best thing is to write your story. No one else can do it. Okay? Now, if you think that it would help you to have a multimedia tool that will teach you how to brainstorm, develop, and write your essays for college, then I highly suggest when you go upstairs and say hi and get your admission tools, ask for Essay Suite. Essay Suite has voluminous information on the brainstorming and development and creation of all different types of essays for college. And it also has a neat thing at the end. There are a bunch of essays from some of my students who are in the Ivies. And if you scroll over on one side, if you mouse over, my commentary will come up paragraph by paragraph telling you why each paragraph works according to an admissions perspective. And if you mouse over on the other side, you will see paragraph by paragraph commentary by a noted AP English teacher as to why each paragraph works from that perspective. So I think it's a phenomenal tool, and if you think you'll need help with the essay, Essay Suite is the thing to pick up. Okay. Now we're going to play the game of which essay is better. I know some of these will seem obvious to you. But you know what? The reasons that they are the better essays may not seem obvious. So let's start. Essay number one. You're getting lost in the mountains of Patagonia during a trip, a vacation trip, and it's negative 10 degrees and the snow's up to here and you have to get back to camp before dark. That could be an interesting essay. Show your sense of adventure, show your endurance, right? Okay. Or the essay entitled, Internet Zeus Just Won't Do. Wait for it. You come from a small town and always yearn to study the classics with the greatest scholars in the field. But until that day comes, you find yourself lost among the stacks of the library, reading about Zeus, Heracles, and Triton. Because for you, it's about the feel of the book, the smell of the musty pages. Reading about Zeus on the internet just won't do. Which essay is the winner? Who says Patagonia? Who says Internet Zeus? Absolutely. Why? If you can do something quirky and intellectual, you, my friends, have winning essays. Okay, next. Essay number one. Your winning touchdown and how you brought glory to your school after a 4-year losing streak. Or what you learned about yourself the day your brother bought you an archery set for your 8th birthday. You'd run down to the lake every day after school and practice hitting cans. All you wanted to do was hit one can smack down the center. You practiced through lunch. Even when you came in for dinner, you were looking through Archery World magazine, looking for tips and tricks on how to hit that can. And one day you did it. You hit that can right down the center. And you tell us how that felt. What attributes did it take for you to get there? And how you've used those attributes to become a serious scholar in high school, and how you know those attributes, at least you hope those attributes, will take you into becoming a serious researcher in college. Which essay wins? Who says the winning touchdown? Oh, you've got this one nailed. Who says the archery set? Of course, because if you can show your discipline and stick-to-itiveness and focus, those are attributes top-tier colleges know they need from you on campus. Last one. The day you faced your fear and learned how to water ski at camp, and since then you're the first to try new things. That could be an excellent essay if built properly. Or the decision to take a job after school. I know. That sounds like a really mundane topic. But it's often the simple things that show us your character. Maybe you took that job to help your family out. Maybe you took that job to pay for college. Maybe you took that job because you've always dreamed of seeing the Duomo. And you know that there's no way you're getting to Florence, Italy, unless you pay for it yourself. So, at the end of those exhausting weekends of work, it's not the counters you washed or the tables you served or the racks of clothing you organized that you see. It's you at the Duomo in Florence next summer. Okay. Who says water skiing is the best essay? Who says the Duomo? Yes, because if there's one thing that admissions loves more than dreamers, it's dreamers who worked very hard to make those dreams come true. Each of these examples shows heart, shows leadership, intellect, quirkiness, character, things that will be memorable to admissions. So now we have an idea of the kinds of things you can write about on your essays, but we need to know what literary devices you should use in order to make those essays sing. Well, there are lots of important literary devices, but right now I'd like to focus on one, the unexpected opening. An unexpected opening seizes our interest with something dynamic, something funny, something suspenseful, even some cool dialogue. An unexpected opening just puts us a little off kilter. We're not quite sure where you're going with that essay, but we surely are compelled to read on. Let me give you an example. Here's the first line of one of my students' essays. I knew it was love the moment she appeared in those yellow stripes. Okay, I'm in. I think I'm going to read an essay about somebody's first love. I didn't find out until the end of the first paragraph that this is written by a student who is a serious student of marine biology and who has a passion for Caribbean fish, in particular the Caribbean parrotfish, hence the yellow stripes, and that he goes to St. Croix every summer to study them. Who knew? Okay, so if he had started that essay by saying, the Caribbean parrotfish is one of the most beautiful fish in the world and I have a passion for that, you or I may not have been predisposed to have read that essay. I certainly would not have been. But he packaged it unexpectedly. He packaged it in such a way that it compelled me to read on. It impressed me. Packaging is so important in so many aspects of our lives. And it is equally important in your college application. Let me give you an example. A mother wants to buy her kids a treat. She walks into a candy store and she sees on a shelf, two containers. One says gummy worms. The other one says dinosaur food. Which does she buy? Dinosaur food. She brings it home and opens it up. What's inside? Gummy worms. Okay, so why did she buy the other? She was compelled by the packaging. Well, it's the same thing in admissions. An admissions officer has two applications on his desk. They both have the same scores, the same GPA, the same in-school leadership, but one has unexpectedly packaged essays, and one has uncommonly packaged leadership, really unusual leadership, compelling leadership. Which application is getting accepted? dinosaur food. Okay, let's look at another one. Let's take one that's totally different. Here we go. That night, I sat down on our front stoop, picked up the pebbles in the surrounding garden bed, and hurled them in angry succession at the sky. Unquote. I'm equally compelled by this opening, as I would be in beginning a novel and learning about the protagonist's vulnerabilities. I can see that this is an essay about overcoming obstacles, and I want to find out what those obstacles were and how this student overcame them. So you see, openings that grab us and pull us into your life are demonstrations of great writing. NYU's Dean Abbott notes, quote, "You'd be hard-pressed to find too many universities that aren't compelled by students who are strong writers, even if they are studying math or science." There it is. There's your sign. Take your essays very seriously. Okay, so now, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to read you one complete winning essay. And I'd like to ask you to take some notes while I'm reading it. And the notes I want you to take are, what are the literary devices that make that essay work? Okay? And then as soon as I'm done, just come right up to the mics, and I will call on a couple of you, and I want to hear what you thought made the essay a winning essay. Okay? Now, I'm reading this essay not because the student and I worked unusually hard on this essay. I work extremely hard with all of my students on their essays. But I'm reading this essay because this was not written by an Intel ICEF winner. It wasn't written by someone who played Carnegie Hall. It wasn't written by a published author. It was written by a super smart STEM student who wanted to tell the story of winning her black belt. Here's how it goes. I led a double life. STEM student by day, self-defense artist by night. From the age of four, discipline and I understood each other. By elementary school, I practiced my moves every evening after homework and rehearsed the commands in my blue runaway bunny pajamas. Kyotsuki, I stood up straight. Otaganire, I bowed deeply in front of the mirror. Kawate, on guard. I dreaded waking up every Sunday morning for karate classes, and spending my Wednesdays there didn't thrill me either. However, my mother swore to me that I would find something of great value in it one day, as she had as a child. So off I went. The Shotokan division of karate was not for the weak of heart, and as far as I could tell at 4 years old, it wasn't for me either. By middle school, I campaigned against karate through active and frequent polemics staged at the kitchen table. It's also random, Mom. Breathing, posing, moving, performing hits that seem to land more out of luck than from technique. Why should I stick with this? If I spent 35% of my karate practice time on debate, I would win every mock trial in school. And with the remaining 65% of my practice time devoted to chess, maybe I would be a grand master one day. Karate is purposeful, not random, my mother would say. This will empower you as a young woman and as a mind. One day you will see. I promise you will see. By high school, Sensei began to speak in physical terms that I actually easily synthesized and believed. My work on the floor mat with that piece of wood before me was all about leverage, he explained, not only to extend force against it, but to know when the wood was weakest. I positioned my legs a shoulder's width apart with the left leg adjusted to 1 1/2 shoulder's width, pointing 30 degrees forward. Now, with 70% of my weight directed to the front leg, I was in position to make the strongest hit. That square of wood didn't have a chance. The tiny mass that was my 14-year-old fist combined with just the right level of acceleration created the momentum to push through a solid, seemingly unyielding object, a temi strike. It was not luck when I broke that square. It was math and physics. Newton's third law had come to life for me, F equals ma. The mass of the fist multiplied by the acceleration enabled by my posture equals the force imparted to the wood, rendering it into splinters. Karate was my new obsession. I spend time after school researching formulas now that would help me understand the purpose of each punch and the results of different amounts of energy propelled through each punch. And I'd recite those formulas on the way to class. ET equals EP plus EK plus ER. I was going to be a black belt. Everything changed the day Sensei used math and physics to explain each move. I never uttered another complaint about attending class and powered through each test until I won my black belt. Here for me was purpose. Here were real-world calculations and explanations that my systematic mind could be excited by and accept. My love for mathematics and physics will always be entwined with the purpose and empowerment I found in karate. Thank you, Mom. I finally see. Okay, what makes it work? You coming down? Okay, excellent.
This essay, there was a lot of action in the words. There was a lot of repetition, that breathing, running, pacing. It really helped.
That is a great one. That is really great. And I didn't think necessarily people would pick up on that. Repetition is a fabulous literary device.
Of course it is.
Beautiful, beautiful. And it makes it exciting for us. It kind of makes it breathless. And it makes it breathless when the admissions officer is reading it too, because it sounds like we're saying it. Great one. One from this side.
Okay. So I thought it was somewhat a little bit informal. So you got more of the person's speaking voice when there was a couple of phrases at the beginning. I can't quite remember, but it was something, I think it was, I showed that piece of wood what I had, and it was just very...
Yes, very, absolutely. Yeah. You're talking, no, you said something very valuable. You're talking about point of view. Her point of view is hilarious. We get to have her point of view from the time she's four, and then we watch her point of view change. See, this is what I was telling you all about changing perspective and Bildungsroman, building from point to point in your life until we get to the end of the essay. Then we get her point of view when she's in middle school, which is kind of hilarious as she's haranguing her mother. And then we get a more mature point of view as she synthesizes things synthesizes her math and science with her karate in high school.
So what she does is she combines her... Well, when she is in high school and she says that the sensei teaches her about the practical applications, she shows her attributes and interests because of her explanation of math and science and those kind of things, and ties it into the karate story.
Perfect. All of these. It couldn't be more perfect. And what this young man is talking about is using verisimilitude. There's an SAT word for you. Verisimilitude in your essay. Authenticity. She made it very authentic by synthesizing the math and science and giving us the formulas. It's very important. Terrific.
What made her essay so outstanding was that it was very personal to her and it meant a lot to her, but also it was personal in a way that detailed character transformation for her point in her life like any novel would have. And it showed how she went from someone who had no interest in a thing and didn't want to excel at it to someone who was able to later be enlightened to how something she might not originally have thought had any merit to her life could have application and could have merit, and how she was able to excel at it once she found out how it could impassion her. And then connecting it to and point out that she was academically and intellectually capable as well by introducing all the physics aspects to it.
That's such an excellent answer. Yes, it's what I call character travel. You know, we have time travel. When I see someone writing like this, it is exactly that, character travel through the piece. That's exciting for us. One more, and then we'll move on. Yes.
I found the essay very economical in how it used its words, and that it didn't meander for a long time on something that she didn't want to say. It just got to the point on what it wanted to say and expressed that very well.
Perfect. That was a tight essay. It kept us moving. The fact that we felt a little breathless, I know why I felt breathless, but if you felt a little breathless while you were listening to it, it is because of just what this young lady said. It was tight. You felt it moving. So this is the way, this is one of the ways you can build your essay. Yes? Okay, one more.
If the objective of a college essay is to understand the person, then her karate story was the means to understand her. It helped her help us understand two things. A, she isn't a STEM student by day, but also a karate student by night. That is a way of describing her. She initially, and then she develops it by synthesizing him to a point where, well, keeps on building up the first, the karate half, and then you add the physics, and then you combine together to this point, and now you understand, okay, so this is a well-determined, intelligent, and very consistent student.
Yes, but had she just done the science, as you were saying, had she just done the science, you know what she wouldn't have been? This is to your point. She wouldn't have been likable. She wouldn't have sounded likable. So the essay, the fact that she was able to do what you said, combine the two, this the humor and the serious science, or you know, and math, made her likable, made the essay likable, and guess what? Likable essays get accepted more often. Beautiful work. Thank you so much, guys. A round of applause for them. Terrific. Terrific.